If wishes were horses, then beggars would ride.
And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
But yesterday's skies, if wishes were horses, then beggars would ride.
Here at Quark's, customer satisfaction is our primary concern.
I'd say we just found our way into a wormhole.
I'm Kira Norris.
Lieutenant Commander Worf, reporting for duty, sir.
You're the best crew any captain ever had. This may be the last time we're all together.
This will shortly become a leading center of commerce and of scientific exploration. For Starfleet, one of our most important posts.
It is quite simply, Commander. The journey you have always been destined to take.
Sensors are not functioning.
We've lost all contact with the space station.
What the hell is happening out there?
Shields up. Damage report.
Battle stations.
I'm Captain Benjamin Sisko. Welcome to Deep Space Nine.
Listen to the prophets. A Deep Space Nine Two True Freaks presentation with Sean Engel and Andrew Layla.
And now with 100% more Paul Spataro.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Listen to the Prophets, a Deep Space Nine show where me and my assortment of cohorts are going through episode by episode of the well-underrated series of Star Trek Deep Space Nine. And I am joined, as always, by... Who am I joined by, anyway? Mr. Sean Engel.
Hey, everyone.
And Mr. Andrew Leyland.
Hello.
And just to make things all the more confusing, we have once again added a little extra dosage of Dr. Bill Robinson.
That's Dr. Bill Bokai.
Oh, God. You know what? I'm gonna start off with, before we even do the synopsis of the episode, I think any one of the four of us looks as much like an athlete as the guy who they had played.
I was thinking that too, and I felt bad because I'm looking at this guy going, no wonder baseball failed. Look at yourself.
Yeah, 300 people for the World
okay,
Series.
Okay, but I don't want to get into the episode yet because I think we'll have stuff to talk about with this. Before we go into Buck Bokai, anybody got any Star Trek things to speak of?
No, I think we kind of, since we, you know, hate to break the fourth wall, but since we kind of record these every 2 weeks... We haven't heard anything else going on since last 2 weeks when we recorded.
I hear Jeremy Lin is going to direct the next movie.
Yes.
Jeremy.
Where'd you hear that?
Jeremy Lin is a basketball player. all right. I guess you know, if you don't know basketball, and then the Lin comment, because the other guy we talked about was Lin. But yeah, just from a Trek point of view, one of my Christmas gifts was the action figure of Space Seed with Kirk and Khan battling each other.
Ooh.
Which I think
it's not very accurate then, because in the episode it's two complete nomads.
Yeah, well, that is very true.
For some reason, Shatner becomes somebody else for 5 minutes, and so does Ricardo Montalban.
It's pretty well rendered, I think, because Khan is actually falling backwards onto the control panel. So it's not your typical, like, just squaring off against each other action figure scene. And Kirk is holding the totally useless bar that he pulled out of the... why that was there, other than to hit somebody with, I don't know.
It's just,
but it
there'd been a murder in engineering that morning.
It sits very well on my shelf next to my Spock with the Horta figure from the same set.
Ah, oh, you beat me to it. The Chamber of the Ages.
And then I think, you know, I will at some point have to get my Trek pop figures. Now, I just wonder, are they the new Trek or are they classic Trek? Hard to tell on a pop figure.
Yeah,
that's the little pop-up bobblehead things.
They're not really bobblehead because their heads don't really move. I've got one here. I've got a couple here. I've got a Green Lantern one, and I've got a, well, no, it's not a pop figure, it's another one, but they're basically just plastic resin with the big heads. I know you guys have the, you said you got the Jesse Pinkman and Walter White from Breaking Bad, so that's kind of what
Groot, like. Groot is a bobblehead.
Oh, Groot's a bobblehead?
Yeah. See, I got one on New Year's from a friend. They gave me a Rocket Raccoon one.
I have that one too.
Is he? I haven't taken him out of the box.
I think he's got a bobblehead, actually.
Because I'm afraid to, because I know it'll, you know, I should keep it in here because it'll be worth more.
Oh, please.
So you tell me I should take it out, huh?
Well, I am never gonna, Bill, I am never gonna tell you to take it out.
that's a whole nother show.
You're gonna take out my. You want me to take out my Rocket Raccoon? Well,
No.
As long as you take out your Groot. Whoa, okay.
Please leave it. Put the Groot back in the box. Step away from the Groot.
I am Groot.
Now, have you ever seen the Japanese character of Domo?
Yes, the big... he looks like a big square. You know, he's got a big...
He almost looks like a big
jaw
brownie.
Teeth. Yeah, yeah, he looks like a brownie with arms.
Oh, yeah, my kids had one teeth. Of those glasses, of like a plastic cup, and I'm like, what the heck is this?
I don't know where he originates from. I know he's a Japanese character, but I don't know what it is. But my kids have always gotten a kick out of him. And my kids debate Batman, Superman all the time. My daughter's a huge Superman fan, of the at least conceptually. She doesn't actually read the comics. And my son is a big Batman fan. So for Christmas, I got them the pop figures of Domo as Superman and Batman.
Yeah, I've seen that. I saw that a long time ago. There used to be this sort of news aggregator site called FARC.com, FARK.com. Mm-hmm. And they always used to have reference to the Domo character on there all the time. I have no idea what it's from. But, you know, I know for a while... back about 3 or 4 years ago, Target, the department store, you know, had it as one of their sort of mascot type characters. So obviously, it's big with people who shop at cheap department stores. I don't
know. I guess I don't know. I remember at New York Comic Con about 2 or 3 years ago, they had like a plush Domo as superheroes. They had them, I think, a Domo Hulk or something like that, and they were very, very pricey at that time, so we passed them over then. And I just looked up quickly on Wikipedia, and it says Domo is the official mascot of Japan's public broadcaster, NHK, appearing in several 30-second stop-motion interstitial sketches shown as station identification during shows. So apparently that's where he originated, which is...
So he's like the NBC peacock of Japan.
Yeah, but, you know.
Except he yet, eats the peacock.
And yet looks like a brownie or a piece of feces of sorts.
Well, it's Japan. They're quirky like that. You know, weren't they the people who had, you know, the vending machines that dispensed underwear over there? Am I thinking right? Or did I mishear that?
I have no idea what you guys are talking about, but this episode can be called Fark Off.
There you go. So, synopsis. and truncate silence.
I guess it's time to jump into it, huh?
In the dark recesses of the mind lies the ultimate enemy.
What is it?
Some sort of folded space.
Where the crew's power of suggestion...
What are you?
It seems we're letting our imaginations run wild.
...reveals their darkest fears.
Flux density readings inside the rupture are off the scale.
The terrifying nightmare begins.
Lower pylon one is gone!
Torpedoes ready. Fire!
On the next episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, we didn't have much Star Trek to talk about this time out, did we?
Yeah, we went on a Domo rant.
Just a lot of Domo parking and farking and popping. I'll just stop.
Okay, so we have If Wishes Were Horses, which first aired on May 16th, 1993. And our summary, as prepared by the Memory Alpha Wiki, is Quark tells Odo he needs to lighten up and have some fun. Perhaps in a holosuite. Odo dismisses imagination as a sign that one is not paying attention to one's real life. Quark offers to create a shapeshifter playmate, at which point Odo declares, "You're disgusting." At seeing Jake Sisko walking towards a hollow suite, Odo warns that Quark had better not have created any playmates for him. Jake's program, Quark explains, is one that includes famous baseball players from Earth, such as Tris Speaker, Ted Williams, and Buck Bokai. Quark has made it his business to learn about human customs and traditions because a wise man, he says, can smell profit in the wind. He tells Odo to try it. "I don't have a sense of smell," Odo says. As Quark explains economics to Odo, on the other side of the bar, Dr. Bashir and Lieutenant Dax are having dinner. Julian wants to become romantically involved, but Jadzia politely refuses and points out that he has eyed several other women as well. She returns to Ops, where she finds there are elevated Thoron emissions in the nearby Denarius Belt. Dax and Sisko hypothesize that it is due to the high amount of traffic around the station. Meanwhile, O'Brien reads his daughter Molly a bedtime story, Rumpelstiltskin, and tucks her in. However, Molly comes back out and claims Rumpelstiltskin is in her room. O'Brien returns with her and finds that Rumpelstiltskin truly has appeared in her room. A more submissive version of Dax tries to seduce Dr. Bashir in his quarters. Buck Bokai, a famous baseball player, follows Jake home from the hollow suites. The characters eventually disappear and random events such as snow on the promenade occur all over the station, seemingly from people's imaginations. Quark finds himself surrounded by beautiful women who are unable to resist him and hopes whatever is going on lasts forever, until he realizes every one of his customers is winning at Dabo. He desperately tries to wish them to lose, but as Odo points out, Quark is outnumbered. Later, Odo returns to his office and runs a security sweep, only to discover that he has wished Quark into a holding cell. The wishing spree continues until the emissions detected earlier turn into a void near the station. It continues to grow exponentially until Sisko realizes it is part of the wish effect, and as more people believe it exists, its size increases. Once the station wishes the void away, Buck Bokai appears in Sisko's office where he explains that he is part of an extended mission that followed a Federation ship through a hole in space. His people wanted to see what imagination is really about in an attempt to learn more about humanoids. Bokai departs shortly after, suggesting that he and his compatriots might return next year to inform Sisko about his species. Luckily, they don't.
So was this...
World of pure imagination.
Oh, I hadn't thought of that one. I was thinking Barney the Dinosaur. Imagination, or Doug Heading. Yeah, it's Doug an Heading. Illusion.
Where to begin? This is not a favorite of mine. I think, the synopsis that I just read, at least half of it, actually more than half of it, takes place before the opening credits. And I think that speaks for what the body of this episode is. There's not a lot of substance to it once it really gets going. I think they had a noble effort to try and show what people think, how they react to things. I think there was a somewhat decent character moment between Jadzia and Bashir when she starts telling him, "You can't worry about what, you know, your imagination is what it is and you don't have to be embarrassed by it." But overall, I don't know. It wasn't terrible. I didn't watch it and think move along home, but it was just kind of forgettable. It really didn't do anything for me.
I don't ever remember seeing this the first time around. This was like watching a whole new episode. I was like, I don't remember this at all.
Well,
and I brought it to the help.
No, I was going to say, you know, I'll have to kind of agree with you. It's not a stellar episode. It's another first contact type episode, except they really don't deal specifically with first contact because the first contact is brought upon by a bunch of strange occurrences around the station. You know, it also kind of had the feel that it might be like one of those Holodeck on the Fritz episodes with, you know, the Holodeck characters getting out and wrecking havoc as well. So there wasn't really any specific focus to what kind of episode it wanted to be. It's just trying to be too many things. There were some interesting moments. I like the, like you, I said, I like the relationship between Dax and Bashir. I like the fact that Bashir finally gets called on his sort of lewd Lothario type feel. You know, like I said, in this first season, I'm really sick to death of Bashir just being this unappealing horn dog. And I like that, you know, he finally kind of gets called out on it, especially by Dax, the real Dax, saying that, do you really want me to be this sort of submissive, you know, just sexpot character? Is that how you think of me? And I'm glad that she calls him out on that. So,
yeah. I agree with you there. That it does have that.
I liked the uncomfort that he had when there was two Daxes, but on the whole, this one's just a bit crap, isn't it?
Yeah, unfortunately.
It's a little bit shore leave, and it's a little bit, I'm sure there's a Next Generation episode where they did this as well, and there doesn't seem like there's a focus to it, and there's some funny bits. Odo with the emu's funny.
I just stun those stupid things.
You know what's funny is the episode about imagination's biggest fault is it lacks imagination.
Yeah. Irony! And I like the conversation at the beginning where Odo's very dismissive of people who like to watch or read stuff that's imagination. You kind of get the feeling he's looking at the camera going, I mean you! But on the whole, it's just dull. The ending's very Picard and therefore completely out of character for Sisko. It's just a bit boring.
Wish it away.
Yeah, I mean, I would have liked just one of them to go, oh no, I just imagined the station blowing up, boom, the end.
It's one of my favorite moments of in Ghostbusters.
I was going to say Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man.
well, actually, it's two of my favorite moments, actually, when I'm thinking about it. First of all, the Stay Puffed Marshmallow Man. And second of all, when they first start using the, whatever you call them, the weapons that they have against the paranormal, he says, don't look into the box. The second he says it, I just looked into the box. You know? Because that's the thing. You tell somebody not to use their imagination, it's almost impossible to not use your imagination from that point forward.
Yeah, because it's like Spectre of the Gun. At least he had Spock being able to mind meld with them to say, right, you will not take this seriously. It is not real. And there they've just got, right, don't think about it. And the minute somebody tells you to not think about something, you can't help it. Yeah, you just, suddenly there would be loads of dancing girls coming in and Chief O'Brien would be stood there going, sorry.
No, speaking of Chief O'Brien, this is one thing that I will commend the show about. I like the parts with Chief O'Brien and Keiko and his daughter. I thought those worked out really well. I thought the little girl who played his daughter, who played Molly, did a really good job. And I heard that she was being kind of difficult on set, especially that scene where she was supposed to come out of the room after Rumpelstiltskin appeared. You know, I actually felt that they had a real family dynamic, and it's nice to see on the show that there's more than just Starfleet business going on. This does have family elements to it, and we've mentioned that between Jake and Ben, but we're also getting to see a little bit of that with the O'Brien family as well.
Yeah, I think they finally found their footing with O'Brien. You know, we've talked about before how in the beginning of the series, you know, he was the established character and they seemed to try and spotlight him a little bit more than they should. But now I think between the storyteller, which I thought was a bad episode, and this one, which I think was a bad episode, but they have found their O'Brien paradigm between his relationship with Julian and his relationship with his family. And I think that's the... basically the character as we're going to see it going forward for the rest of the series. And I think it serves him much better than trying to make him more of a leading man type.
Agreed.
Yeah, I mean, I was just reminded of lots of other better episodes watching this one. Apparently the original script called for Rumpelstiltskin to be a leprechaun and Cole Meany said, not a chance.
Yeah, because that's all we want to do is make that stereotype. Oh, he's Irish, so obviously we'd think of a leprechaun, because that's all they have over in Ireland. So it's leprechauns and Lucky Charms and
moons and clothes. They could have got Warwick
Davis.
Potatoes.
Potatoes!
And golf courses.
So that was changed. And originally, it's interesting that you... All this is from the companion. It's interesting that you mentioned the holodeck. This was originally a Holosuite episode. And they changed it because at the time, they were developing the Next Generation episode, Ship in a Bottle, which was also a holodeck episode. So maybe that's why there's no focus at the end of it.
I liked... One of the very few story elements I liked is that towards the end, when things were getting really bad, Rumpelstiltskin basically reverts to character and starts offering to save them in exchange for Molly.
I thought
that was a very creepy thing, but it was well written into the story. I thought that was one of the better parts of this.
Yeah, and the little backwards dwarf from Twin Peaks did a good job with it.
Oh yeah,
but I kind of didn't like that it was Sisko who said no. You don't have to make that choice. I think O'Brien should have been the one who said, "Not a chance. You are not having my daughter."
Yeah, it did seem kind of out of play. You know, even though Sisko is the commander and he's the one in charge, for him to be the one to go, "Hey, this is all imaginary. Just think positive and everything will be okay." It didn't seem part of his character. It felt off, and I think that's why in general this episode just doesn't hold up the way that the previous episodes have in the show.
Yeah. Can't argue with that.
So, another one that we don't have anything to talk about.
Yeah, sadly.
And then back to just what we were saying. I how the hell did they cast this guy as Buck Bacai?
Because Seriously. He looks like the production designer who was the picture of Buck Bacai that's on O'Brien, not O'Brien, on Sisko's desk that they'd already used.
I mean, I know Babe Ruth, who is pretty much universally accepted as the greatest baseball player of all time, does not physically look athletic. He looks heavy set, kind of paunchy. Doesn't look like he should be as fast as he was. But when you see him, he
you watch
also
him in those old
like...
films. He runs pretty quick in those old films.
the super speed films. But when you see him, you do sense like a level of power from him. You do like you know he looks like the kind of guy like if he was mad at you, he would scare the crap out of you. This guy looks like somebody you'd push around at a Comic-Con. <You know?
laughs> Well, yeah, the picture on the desk was of Greg Jean, who was the model maker for the show. So when they cast the role, they had to look for somebody who looked like the picture. So basically, they shot themselves in the foot. They just put it on as a throwaway gag on Sisko's desk. And then later, when they had to actually cast an actor for the role, they were kind of stuck.
I think they could have found somebody who facially looked like him but had an athletic build. It's not like he had such a big role in the show that you needed, you know, a master thespian. You could have cast.
Why didn't they just get the guy that was in the picture?
He probably didn't have an athletic build either.
He's not an actor as well.
Well, neither was this. Oh, sorry. sorry. I went there.
Put a check mark next to Dr. Bill for that one.
Well, see, I think it's, we mentioned prior to this that they were kind of, uncomfortable with bringing in the character of a leprechaun into the show because it would have been relating to O'Brien. Why did they feel that since Buck Bacai, I guess Buck Bacai was an Asian character as a baseball player, they had to get someone who was Asian. But, did they have to get someone, who was just sort of didn't really even feel like a baseball player at all? It didn't make any sense.
Well, like we said earlier, maybe that's why baseball was failing.
Yeah, I could understand if this person is the highest ranking baseball player out there. Yeah.
Well, he was the what? No, he wasn't. He the greatest baseball player of all time.
Yeah,
had broken all records.
Including Joe DiMaggio's hit streak, which is one that people say will never be broken. It's
but he didn't date Marilyn Monroe.
Maybe in a holosuite.
Oh,
The other thing that just didn't sit right with me is it just picking? I guess I'm gonna take back my criticism before I even say it. But what I was gonna criticize was the fact that Odo's fantasy was to have a woman on each arm because I think Odo's fantasy would be money. But
I mean Quark.
You mean Quark?
Quark. Excuse me. Yeah, not Odo. I'm sorry. But I don't think it was tapping their minds to their deepest fantasy. I think it was tapping their minds to whatever they were imagining at the moment. And since Quark was talking about the Holosuite and having things for sexual pleasure, whatever, I guess that would be in his imagination. So before I even had a chance to say my criticism, I've kind of retracted it.
So did anybody else? I'm sure you caught it because it was kind of blatant that the birds turned into the two girls.
Yeah, I noticed that. You know, once the birds disappeared, the two girls
that they walked around the corner.
Yeah,
I was like, well, that's kind of sexist. You know, two birds, two women. Now, do you think that was actually Quark locked in the cell, or was that like an imaginary Quark?
Imaginary Quark.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Same way it was imaginary Jedzia.
Ah,
yeah. Right. Well, unimaginary. They also said, you know, when Jake was wanting to go play baseball and he was supposed to be studying, supposedly that might have been an imaginary Sisko, imaginary Ben coming up to talk to him as well. So, yeah, this just wasn't really all that great an episode. You know, it's not horrible, but it's just not.
It's just a bit meh, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that's sadly what I think. I think we're going to agree on that. Yeah.
Did you guys catch there was a little production flub at the very end when Buck is talking to Sisko, and just before he turns and walks away, there's a scene and there's a small ship on a desk in the background, and it's sitting about 2 to 3 feet away from the edge of the desk, and they're cutting back and forth between the two actors. Okay, the guy in the baseball suit and the actor. And in the last scene where Bukai walks away, that spaceship moved and was now 1 foot away from the edge of the table. Now, that's how enthralled I was with what I was watching, that I'm looking at the background and I catch, hey, then I'm reversing and I watched that scene like 3 times. I'm like, yeah, that ship moved a whole foot. A whole 2 foot almost to the end of the table. Oh, yeah, the episode's over. Thank God.
Oh. Yeah, not the most ringing endorsement, I guess, this time out.
Yeah, I would love to give you some, you know, real positives from it, but sorry.
I mean, the only thing nice was the two Jadzias.
I like the submissive Jadzia.
We have the submissive Jadzia and the aggressive Jadzia. It was best of both worlds.
Yeah, Quark's Darbo girls were pretty as well, I suppose.
But they were not
Zia.
No.
No, that's true. Not enough Kira in this one.
See now.
Yeah,
well, but last episode we got to see her in her.
Well, poor Kira. I mean, what kind of stuff does she have in her head?
Yeah, everyone else is at least a vaguely positive imagination. Kira's just everyone dying in a fireball.
fireball coming at her, and then Kai on fire.
I will admit for TV episode, that was a good firewalk stunt. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
But yeah, what is wrong with Kira that everyone else is thinking of, you know, hot women, you know, submissive women, emus, you know, their favorite baseball players, and her imagination is the station catching fire and someone on fire running towards her trying to tackle her.
Maybe that's a little bit you can take a good character moment out of that, because this is a woman who grew up basically, you know, in a slave state or in a prisoner of war camp. And you know, her life has been torture. You know, I mean, this is the first point in her life where she's got comforts. So maybe, you know, she's more deeply disturbed than you can see from the surface. Awesome. That would tend to be more appropriate considering her history.
Yeah, because she didn't seem to have any good fantasies going on.
Yeah.
There was another scene with her that I thought, I don't know if it was written or if it was maybe something that was ad-lib that they just stuck in. When the station's vibrating and everything's going to hell and they're talking about the readings and she's looking at something and she says, the something readings, and then she says, I don't even know what the heck I'm saying. Like, I don't know if
she was doing a commercial about which feed to find the episode on.
But
do you think that was a commentary from the writers on doublespeak? What the hell does this even mean?
Because they're all spouting out, oh, the Thoron waves are going beyond this, and oh, it's going to implode in the facial rays, and then Kira goes, I don't even know what I'm saying.
Yeah, the last part where they're trying to implode the, you know, wave torpedoes and the rift and all the technobabble just got a bit too much. You know, it definitely did feel like a tech heavy episode of Next Gen there. So.
Yes. All right, we want to rate it then.
Yeah, let's go ahead and get this done with.
All right. I was lucky enough to have this be my episode, so Again, I say 3 is an average episode. Not great, not terrible. This episode, I think, is below average, but I think it was watchable. So I'm not going to give it a total dismissal, and I'm going to put it at 2.5.
I'm going to agree with everything Paul said, except I'm going to give it a 2.
Yeah, same here. I'm going with Andy. It wasn't as good as the last episode, obviously. I mean,
at least the last one had some meat to chew on. Mm-hmm. This was just gristle.
Yeah, this one, you know, if they would have dealt more in the idea that these are travelers and this is their way of initiating first contact, rather than just wrapping it up in the last, you know, 3 or 4 minutes of the episode that this is how we do first contact, I think that could have made the show a little bit more substantive. But just, you know, everyone having their imagination go off, and I do like that it made Bashir look like an ass, so I'm glad about that, because Bashir, I'm sick of him this first season. So yeah, two bars of gold press platinum for me. Bill, are you giving us a 3.25?
No.
3.75.
No. I'm going to start out with a 2. I'm going to bump it up to a 2.5 for the double Jadzia, but I'm going to drop it 0.25 for Buck Bukai, making a 2.25. Superstar.
Now,
so I'm the highest rated on this one. I think that may be a first.
Yes. Sure, go with that.
I didn't even like it, and I'm the highest rated.
I don't know if we mentioned it last time, but I know in the last episode and in this episode, Morn was in both of them.
Oh, yes. Didn't mention it last time, but yeah, he was in both. In this one, he was in the very, very first scene, I think.
Yep.
Is very far in the background.
Yeah, and his roles they've been a bit more substantive. I mean, obviously they talked about him in the last episode, but, you know, he was still appeared in the episode. So far, Morn has appeared in all the episodes of this first season, so.
Well, what do you think Morn's fantasy was?
Jadzia.
Sitting at the bar.
Sitting at the bar.
Yes.
It reminds me of, I don't know if it was, I think it was a Peanuts cartoon where they were showing like everybody's fantasy, and Snoopy was like, you know, laying upside down on his doghouse as he does on his back. And they showed like his dream was him laying on the doghouse. And I think that would be more. And he's sitting in the bar, and his fantasy is he's sitting in the bar. All right. So that said, we want to do some email.
Yeah, let's do some email. Let's hope that that'll bring us out of the funk of this episode.
Incoming transmission.
Okay.
The malaise.
Our first email is from Gene Hendricks of the Hammer Strikes podcasts, the Quantum Cast, Anime Freaks, which he does with some dude. And the episode is titled Move Along Home, and it says, Paul, Sean, and Andy, I got first billing this time. Allow me to respectfully disagree with my fellow countrymen. You know what? I think it's a sign of disrespect.
Okay, well, sorry. No,
let Gene continue.
I'd say we move on to the next email.
The next email is...
I'll read Gene's email.
I got it. Relax there, you Englishman, you. As Andy said, all of your points were valid, and the email ends right there. However, I think this episode achieves what it set out to do, which was to give us more insight into the characters. We find out just how much Odo dislikes Starfleet protocols, and not just for this officer in particular. I think they did a good job in unleashing René Auberjonois in this one, since that disdain came through very well. We did find out that Quark actually cares about people he interacts with, given that he completely changes how he plays the game when he finds out what's really at stake. I also don't see his playing the game as being purely for profit, since there's a wee bit of self-preservation in it. I read it as, you play this game, cheater, or we will have fun another way. We find out that Dax has a really ruthless streak in her, since she says that she would leave an injured comrade behind. that makes you look at her a bit differently from the friendly face she presents to everyone. We also see that Sisko is in a 9-to-5 office. Once his shift is up, he goes home. It's good that they brought Jake back, even if his acting still isn't up to snuff. As for the sing-song voice, I think that was Avery Brooks more than anything else. He strikes me as the kind of guy having seen him as a convention that would do that just to be silly. Is it a great episode? Nope. Heck, it's not even a decent episode. Did it add to the universe, even with the rock climbing? Yes. And for that, I'm okay with it. Gene. I don't disagree with any of the points that Gene made. I just think that they could have done all of those things and actually made an entertaining episode at the same time.
Yeah,
it's that simple.
Yeah, his points are well taken, but the simple fact was it was a failure of an episode. They could have done these things much better. I hate to use a euphemism, but you can't polish a turd, and this episode was just a turd.
Mm-hmm. Lipstick on a pig.
Mm-hmm. Actually, you can polish a turd. I saw it on MythBusters.
Domo.
Oh yeah, the Domo character. Yeah, you could polish that, I guess. There you go.
Okay, fair enough. The next email is from Paul in Greensboro, and this one's also titled Move Along Home, unless he's trying to tell us something, I don't know. Wow, I was in a chatty mood when I wrote those last emails, Paul says. Thanks for reading them, I'm glad they led to some good discussion. Move Along Home is an episode I'm likely to skip when I rewatch the show. The game's appeal, as a story device, seems to be that it's clever in a cute way, which is something I never enjoy. I assume that this was one of the scripts that had been pitched for TNG. You could swap out the crews and it would play out exactly the same. No one on the Enterprise is motivated by greed, like Quark is, but someone could have been duped into playing the game. It seems strange to me that the show would make the first official contact with Gamma Quadrant aliens so insignificant, but the aliens themselves so mundane. They would work as a one-off on the Next Generation. Looking forward to your discussion of the Negus. The Ferengi changed so much from their early appearances. As snarling baddies in the last outpost, they're boring, but as the metaphor for greed and capitalism that they became, they're very entertaining and one of the best additions to Trek lore. Well, thank you very much, Paul.
Again, yes, some very good points. I hope you liked the episode that we did on the Negus. I think so far that was the one this season that I think we all agreed was probably the best so far. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, you know what? We knew going into this that we were going to deal with growing pains in the first season. And it's been a long time since I did a full watch through, and I'm doing this kind of as we're going along. So I expect things to really start making an upturn by the time we get to the second season. And at this point, we're significantly into the first season, and, you know, we're getting there.
Yeah, we've only got 4 episodes left of season 1.
And having actually watched the next episode already because I had a little time to kill, I think we're going to see a little upturn there, too. And I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, but I will definitely say, for a first season of a Star Trek series, this has gone on significantly better than some of the other Next Generation shows. I think this season particularly holds up better as a full season, at least being more entertaining than some of the other first seasons of, like, well, specifically Voyager, Next Gen, even Enterprise.
Yeah, I think the main problem is they blew so much of the budget on the pilot that they've just had to scrabble to catch up a lot. Yeah. And the money's just not been there for a lot of the later shows, which has led to a lot of bubbles. You know,
I'm not buying that because a lot of the problems we have aren't with the special effects. They're with the writing.
I know, but it's all station based. And as we get a bit further on, once we get the introduction of the Defiant, and certainly the Cardassians start playing a bigger part, we'll get off the station a bit more. And you can only afford to do that when you've got a bit of money.
That is true. Okay, I'll give you that. But we're a good way away from the Defiant yet.
And I think
Yeah, I think it's not until at least.
I think that's season four, late. Isn't it?
Yeah.
It starts get in season four, and I think they get it in season three, because season four is when Sisko, or at least the end of season three is when Sisko is promoted to captain, I think.
But I think we see an upturn in quality before we get to the Defiant. So I don't think it's just the fact that they become more mobile. You know, I think they could still write quality even with runabouts, and I think they eventually do. And you know, that's not to say that we haven't seen quality yet. I think we have seen some quality, but I think we get a more consistently high quality later than we do now. That's all.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can probably talk about it more when we do the season one wrap up, but I do think they went into this thinking it was just going to be like the Next Generation, and it isn't.
Yeah, I think they had to find their legs, and I think we're getting there. I think they are finding them now. You know, I think we had that first run of episodes, which you had two things. You had one was episodes that were written before they knew who was even being cast to play the roles and what the actual dynamics of the portrayals were going to be, and two, that they wanted to use up some of their scripts that they had laying around that were originally TNG episodes, and they had to repurpose them. And you know, it suffered a little bit for some of those episodes, but I think, you know, we're getting to the point now where they know their characters, they know their actors, and they're starting to develop things a little bit.
I agree.
Indeed.
All right, Andy, it's that time again. Tell us what's coming up next time.
Next time on an all-new episode of Listen to the Prophets. Oh, dear God, it's a Lwaxana Troi show.
Oh, no. Gate again.
Really not.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Everybody can be so nice in my house. They just come right in like Lenny and Squiggy. Hello, are you recording? Shut up!
Right, come on, let's get on. We've been doing an hour. That's an hour of sleep that Sean will never get. You suffer for your art, don't you?
And I've got, this is like 55 minutes now of stuff that I'm going to have to call through to get little outtakes at the end. So, go. Do this. My voice isn't going to hold out much longer. Go.
All right, so let's jump in then. Or not.
I thought it was Sean's intro. I was waiting for him.
No, you got this episode.
No, I thought you were doing this episode.
Right, whoever does the synopsis does the intro.
Right? Yeah. Well, I've not written anything.
You really have to write an intro to the show? Come on.
No, I have to write intros to the show.
I'm a what?
Professional, not podcaster, but I know you got some job.
All right. Okay.